Hey guys, welcome to Journey Podcast. I'm your host, Smita Kanturi. You're going to hear a new segment in Journey Podcast as Coach It Forward. Hope you guys enjoy. Hello everybody, I have Wendy Byford with me today. She is a corporate America escapee who went on to build a seven-figure business of her own with 20,000 clients and several employees. She now helps brilliant underutilized women with successful careers who want to share their special talents with the world, but do not know how to get started, creating the exciting future fulfillment business of their dreams. Thank you for being here and welcome to the show, Wendy.
Thank you, Samita. It's wonderful to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. When I was reading your introduction, I myself was like so intrigued in understanding, like, because I also sometimes think how to get started.
Right. And lots of people in corporate America get stuck there.
Yes.
They really know that they've got something inside them that wants to come out, that they could do so much more than their job is allowing them to do. But when they think about, well, how do I start a business? They get overwhelmed. Okay. They think that it's setting up General Motors instead of a small business. And so when I work with these people, what I'm helping them to do is to get clarity on what it is that they want to do, who they want to do it for and why. Get focusing on the right actions that they need to take, and also overcoming their limiting beliefs, and then getting aligned so that they have all of their thoughts, their beliefs, their words, their emotions, their actions, they're all in alignment, which makes growing a business so much easier than when your energy is fighting the actions that you're trying to take. So that way we can get people started, and then they can go on to build the six figures, multiple six figures, seven figures, whatever they wish.
Awesome. Awesome. Why did you even start this one? What is the story behind starting this kind of a help to other people?
Well, I think like most people, when you're growing a career, it's never a straight line, right? It's always kind of meandering through the forest, trying to figure out what you're here to do. And so coaching is really my act three, if you like. When I left university, I, like many of my generation, bought into the, well, you know, you've got to have a good education and then you've got to get a good job. And so I worked in corporate America for several years. And when I left, I thought I knew what I wanted to do and then decided that I absolutely hated it. And so I remember not long after I had left corporate America and decided that what I was going to do was something I really hated. I remember sitting on the edge of my bed in the morning. My husband had gone off to work and I thought, I don't know who I am anymore. You know, I don't know how to get started in something that I will find fulfilling, that will give me back my sense of identity. Because if you're a successful career woman, then you know that a lot of your identity is wrapped up in the job that you're doing, right? I used to travel all over the world. I used to do things that our company hadn't done before and be, you know, proud of the fact that I and my team could solve these wonderful problems that we had. And when I wasn't doing that anymore, I didn't really know who I was. I knew I had these skills, but I didn't have that sense of identity. So I decided that I really wanted to go into coaching. Now, this was 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago. And I started to study with some people that you may be familiar with, people like Bob Proctor and John Assaraf and those sorts of people. And I was going to be a coach, and I got sidetracked. I got completely sidetracked into building a seven-figure business that had nothing to do with traditional coaching. We set up LLCs and corporations for people. We partnered with various people who were doing seminars and whatnot and wanted to give these assets to their clients. And so we built up around 20,000 clients or more. We did a huge number of filings. And the part that I loved was teaching people how to look after what we had set up for them.
Oh,
that to me was the most important thing. It was helping people to understand and really use what it was that we had set up. And after we had been doing this for 15, 16, 17 years, as you can see, I have some gray hair, and I'm starting to think about what I wanted to do kind of in the future. And I kept thinking, you know, at some point I want to sell this business and I want to go back to what my love is. And my love has always been helping people, teaching people, coaching people, helping them to get started. And I thought, you know, I'll bet there are so many women who were just like I was, waking up to the fact that there is so much more that they have to offer than they could do in their job, right? Just wanting to get that out into the world and not knowing how to get started, being a little overwhelmed, perhaps a bit intimidated, not having confidence, not understanding, you know, where the money's going to come from, not even knowing what they would do because they don't recognize their own brilliance. And this is what I love working with. These are the people, these are my people that I really want to help.
Okay. The first question is, what age were you to shift your career?
Oh my goodness. So this is for anyone who thinks that they are too old, right?
Exactly my point.
Right. So I left corporate America when I was 50.
Wow.
And I became an entrepreneur. Okay. And then we've been running our business for 16, 17 years. And so now I've decided that that I want to do something else. And I had done a couple of things before we hit on growing that business. I had done a couple of other things. As I said, I wanted to be a coach. So I had coached for a while. I had some clients. So I am a coach. I am very knowledgeable. I have tons of experience. I was in corporate America in different companies for 30 years. I've run my own company for like 17 years. Before that, I was a coach. And now I'm going back to be a coach and I am 70.
Wow. Wow.
So don't ever think that you are too old, because I hear so many career women saying, well, you know, I'm 45, I'm 50, I can't do this. Of course you can. You're just starting another phase of your life. And it doesn't mean that you have to work 80, 90, 100 hours a week. You can grow the business at your own speed and you can have the business of your dreams. There are lots of ways to do it. So you don't have to be, you know, 30 years old. You can do it when it's right for you.
Okay. In that note, let me ask you, like, if I have to start, for example, the question that I always will have, it is my personal question. Maybe many people, you might have heard the same thing. Like, we have the financial responsibility that we need to take care of our family. Right. If I'm stopping what I'm doing and starting an entire new thing, let's just say I'm starting a business. Mm-hmm. I don't even know when I can start getting the return, or like, of course, I have to really think about the financial situation is what I'm trying to say. Right. So with that thing, the limiting belief or the mindset challenge, as you were mentioning before, will always be there. Yes. How do you answer to a person like me, or like, how do you coach that kind of a scenario?
By looking at what's realistic for that person, in all honesty. Some people get a golden handshake from their corporation and they're now terrified of starting their own business, even though they have some money that they can use.
Okay.
And so it becomes a matter of, can we get over the limiting belief that they don't have confidence in themselves to do this in order to use that money to start their future? Okay. So that's one thing. Sometimes people, as you say, they have responsibilities. They may be the sole breadwinner in their family. They can't afford to just quit their job. Yes. And then say, I'm going to start a business, right? So in that case, then we're looking at, okay, so how do you start the business in conjunction with holding down a full-time job? And there are lots of different ways to do that. So we look at the expertise, we look at the area that you really want to work in, and what's it going to take to build up your credibility in that area so that when you go out to do whatever it is you want to do, you can do it. So let's say, for example, that you are an HR professional. Okay. There are lots of small businesses that can't afford to have an HR
yes.
department, right? We never could, even though we were a seven-figure business. We never had an HR department. I mean, my goodness, we had so many other things to spend money on. That wasn't one of them. So we would hire people with that expertise. So all you need to do then is to get 1, 2, 3 clients where you are providing that expertise to them. And that might be enough money coming in on a monthly basis for you to then maybe go part-time or leave your job. And it depends upon the company that you're working for. Sometimes they may allow you to cut back your hours because they're looking for ways to save money. So there's all different ways to look at how you're going to fund this. You don't necessarily have to borrow money, although it's an option. You might be able to get a grant if you're in a very specific type of situation. You may be able to get a grant to start a business. There's all kinds of ways to look at it. So the funding should never hold you back. Seriously. The things that will hold you back are lack of clarity, lack of focus, and lack of alignment. And those we can take care of.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yep.
Okay.
When you are giving that kind of an advice to anybody, let's just say you gave that advice to me right now, would you also give a basic estimation of the business that I wanted to start? Or like that estimation of how much I can afford? Of course, I can always have the number that how much I can afford back of my mind. But do you provide that kind of an estimation as well for them to understand where their business should start with?
Right. So if it's a limiting belief, and of course, everybody is different. Some people are going to come out of corporate America from the financial side, and they've already got the number in their head. They know. Right? Some people don't. And so if it's a limiting belief, we're going to sit down and say, okay, first of all, we're going to find out how much money it's going to take every month for you to pay your bills. Okay. So that's the first thing that you need to figure out. You're running a household, you're supporting children. So you go back through every bank statement, every credit card, all of your cash purchases. You look at everything and say, okay, this is how much money I need every month to pay my bills. Then we look at what it is that you want to do. And to get to the point where we have a good idea of what it is that you're going to be doing, we need to go through a number of steps. Okay. So when we get to the point where you say, this is what I want to do, then we need to go out and take a look at, on average, what's the going rate for what it is that you want to do? Hmm. How much do people normally make? And you may be in an area where you already know. So if you're in corporate America and you've been hiring people, for example, consultants to do a specific job, then you know what you were paying those consultants already. So you know what you would be worth, right? But if you're coming out into an area where you're not really sure, then it's always good to underestimate how much you're worth until you've got that rock solid credibility. So if somebody, if you wanted to be a coach, right, and you're feeling like, you know, I've never coached before and I don't really, you know, I know I've got this expertise, but, you know, coaches in my area who have experience are charging $400 an hour. Well, then you might look at yourself and say, okay, I'm just starting out. So I'm going to do $300 an hour instead of 400, or in a package, it will average out to 250 an hour, something like that. So we're going to talk about what makes sense and then figure out from that how many clients you need to have in order to cover your expenses. And so you may start out with having clients on the side, right? So you've got your corporate job, but you know, on the weekends or in the evenings, you're doing this job on the side. And is it going to be tough? Of course it's going to be tough. Right now I have a wonderful client who has a daughter that needs attention. She works full time and she's building her business. And so is she working hard? Of course she's working hard. But we've got a goal. We know where she wants to go. We know what it is that she wants to do, and we're going to get there. So it really depends upon a number of things. You know, are you ready? Not everybody is ready to start their own business. They may not like where they are. They may think, you know, I'm better than this. Well, if that's true, I would invite you to go to my YouTube channel, From Career Woman to Business Owner, and look at the training, the five questions that you need to answer before you start your business, and look at the module on why you want to start a business. Because the why may not be that you want to start a business at all. The why may be that you want to get out of your job. Well, in that case, you can go work for another company. If you're in a corporation and you hate corporate America, go work for small business. If you don't think you have enough opportunities, go to a larger company. Take a sabbatical, upgrade your skills. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do other than start a business, right? If you're going to start a business, and I'm speaking from experience here, right? I built a seven-figure business, and I can tell you there were days I sat underneath my desk, banging my head against a wall saying, why did I do this? Why did I start this business? Now, in the end, of course, I loved my clients. I loved working with these people. This was an area that I was passionate about. And so, of course, you know, after my 5-minute tantrum, I'd calm down and say, of course, I've got a business. Well, let's just get on with this. But not everybody is really set up to be an entrepreneur. But if you feel like you've got this in you, you really, really want to start a business of your own, then there is always a way to do it.
When you were talking about clarity and focus, let's just say I know where I want it to be, maybe like down the line, 5 years, 10 years, whatever, but I don't know where to start. Of course, you were mentioning that everybody will have that question, where to start.
Right.
I even understand where to start. I know my end goal, but I don't know the steps to reach to that point. In that case, how do you suggest, or like, how do you help me to understand that clarity for myself?
Okay. That's an excellent question, Smita. And not enough people ask the question of basically how you get real clarity. Because what I've found in doing coaching with people is that even the people who say, you know, I know exactly what this is going to look like, I know exactly what I'm going to do, when I start asking them questions, it becomes really clear that they don't have enough clarity, right? They've got a general idea of what it is that they want. And so we start to drill down to get real clarity. And so the areas that I'm drilling down in before you go running off and doing anything is, okay, so you know why you want to start your business. And this is really important, understanding why. Because this becomes the benchmark against which you're going to judge anything that you decide to do. If your why, okay, and you know that you've hit your why because you're crying, right? It's just such a relief to finally get your real, honest to goodness why out, that you're probably in tears. And if your why is that you want to be there for your children in a way that perhaps your parents never were for you, yes. Well, if you tell me then that you want to build a multi seven-figure business, I'm going to go back and say, how is that going to fulfill your why? To build that kind of business, you're not going to be there for your children.
Yep.
It takes a lot of work to do that. So how is that going to help you with your why? Right. So you need to get your why down. And then we need to kind of use it as the benchmark against which we judge other things. Then we're going to look at what area do you want to be in and who is it that you want to serve? And be really clear, because the demographics, I don't care what color socks they wear, right? They say, you got to know your avatar right down to the color socks they wear. I don't care. I honestly don't care, but I care about the psychographics, because if you don't get these right, if you don't get the personality part of this right, then you're going to end up building a business that you hate. You can't wait to get out of, because these people are not going to be your people. So you need to get, yeah, some of the things for the demographics, but you need to get the psychographics down. Are these people coachable? Do they show up on time for their meetings with you? Do they pay on time? Do they refer you because they're so happy to work with you? They think you're wonderful and they refer you to other people. What are the real things inside their mind that you really want to get down on paper and say, these are my people and I am so happy to serve them that I jump out of bed in the morning to do it?
Okay. Got you.
So Once you understand that, and then you understand where your brilliance is, and this is where a lot of people stumble, right? Then you can look at where does your brilliance intersect where these people that you want to serve want to go. Now, your brilliance is probably not what you think it is, right? So I'll give you a quick example. For myself, people always thought that the reason I could build my company was because I knew so much about the area, right? I knew about businesses. I had a lot of friends who were attorneys and were paralegals and were CPAs, and I knew a lot about this area. And although I never gave advice, I could speak in generalities about what the options were so that people could make reasonable decisions, right? And if I couldn't tell them, I would refer them off to an attorney. So people thought, well, that's your skill set, but it wasn't. My brilliance lay in the fact that I could create systems. And because I could create systems, I could grow a business from, you know, six figures up to seven figures. That's where the brilliance was. So that if I wasn't in the office, the business kept going. If I was traveling in another country, the business kept going because I built the systems to be able to do that. That was where my brilliance was. And so part of helping people get started is figuring out where's your real brilliance, because you're probably not seeing it. And once you figure that out, then it becomes so much easier to decide, okay, the people I want to serve are here, and this is where their pain is. This is what I can help them with. This is where they want to get to, and I can help them get there. And this is the brilliance I'm going to use to do that.
Got you. Awesome. When you're saying people need to understand when they are ready, when you're asking a question like, are you ready to move on? How do I identify myself if I'm ready or not?
You're going to know that you're ready when it becomes a burning desire to do, that this thing is calling you so much that you are willing to spend your weekends on it. You are willing to spend your nights on it. You are willing to work with somebody to make this a reality. If all you're doing is sitting around having coffee with your friends saying, yeah, I'd really like to start a business, but then you're not ready. It's the but that says, I'm going to make up excuses to make myself feel better for the fact that I'm really not ready to do this.
That's a very well way to put it, actually. That gave a lot of sense. Awesome. You were also mentioning that you sat under your desk and banging your head where you felt like, yeah, why did I even start this? So what was your lowest moment in your business?
I'm sorry, say again.
What was your lowest moment and how did you come out of it?
My lowest moment. My lowest moment was literally sitting under the desk, banging my head against a wall because I was working every night until 10 o'clock. I was up every morning at 4:30 or 5 o'clock to go start my business. And I had fallen into a trap that I will tell every businesswoman. This will probably happen to you, and here is how you solve it. I've fallen into the trap that of all of the different pieces of my business in this process, there was one piece of the process that I thought I had to do that nobody else other than myself or my husband could do.
Okay.
Right. And it was a huge trap because nobody is indispensable, not even me. And when I was sitting under my desk, banging my head against a wall, what made me stop was I realized I have to find a way to do this. I have to find a way to teach somebody else to do this piece of the puzzle, or I'm going to die. And I'll die under my desk, banging my head against a wall. So it made me sit up and say, there is a way to do this. And I figured it out. Right? It took me 3 months to build the process, hire the person, train the person, and then completely back off and let them run with it. But once I'd done that, I could do it again. If I'd done it once, I could do it again. So it was brilliant. It took that to get me down to the point of realizing that nobody is indispensable. You can build a system around anything. And once you do that, then you really can be the CEO of your company. and work on the business, not in the business. And that's where everything was like, this is brilliant. We are good to go.
How do you understand what needs to be delegated or what you should own as a person who started the business?
You know, that's a really interesting question. And again, not enough people really ask this question of what do I need to hang on to? You need to have control of the systems that make your business run. Okay. And that's because if you decide to sell the business, what you're really selling, in addition to your client list, is basically the processes. And if you don't control the processes, then you're going to be held to ransom by somebody else. Right? So the way that I looked at it was I had to be able to build the process so that I knew how everything was supposed to run. Once the process was built, then the responsibility for that process was given to an employee, and it was their responsibility to follow the process or to modify it and to let me know what the modification was. So they could make modifications, and we would have lunch and learns where we'd all sit around a table and I would ask the question, okay, what screwed up this week? Right? Now, a lot of people would say, you can't ask that question. People are, you know, not going to tell you. We had built a culture in the business where it wasn't a problem to say, yeah, this screwed up. I screwed up, right? That wasn't the problem, because the next question was, how did we solve the problem? Right?
Yes.
And now how have we modified the process so it doesn't happen again? Right. So people could say, yeah, this screwed up and it was really bad and this is how we fixed it. They then had pride in this is how we fixed it and this is how we've changed the process to make sure it doesn't happen again. So they would have that responsibility. The next thing that we looked at was what were the areas that could be automated? Now, we made a brilliant hire at one point. We hired an employee to look after creating company record books. And our clients were fairly high level, so we wanted to make sure that the book that we sent out was a really good book. The documents in it were documents that we had created, that they played very well to what our clients were doing. And we printed everything in-house and basically sent everything out. The binder went from the printer to the client and they could just put things together. Well, that whole printing process really took a bit of putting things together. So when we hired a fellow who was going to go to this process, he actually had his university degree in IT, but he couldn't find a job. So we gave him a job and he said, hey, can I look at this area? And we said, sure, go for it. He automated that whole area for us. Now, in doing that, two things happened. One was that it meant that when he left, we didn't have to replace him because the whole thing was automated. But the other thing that was really great was in doing that project, he upgraded his CV to the point where he just got a killer job when he left us.
Awesome.
So it was a win-win. So we automated that entire area because it could be done and we had the right person to do it. So you want to look at things that are repetitive and that gives you some scope for automating. We also automated other things where we could put software together so that when we did a form, for example, that would go to the client, that all of the information would be sucked out of a database and we didn't have to re-enter things over and over again, or we didn't have to cut and paste because everything was sucked out. So you want to look at those areas to see where you can automate things. The next thing that you want to look at is what can you outsource, right? What's something that you can actually get rid of, but if that person goes under, you can either find another partner that you can outsource to easily, or you can bring it back in-house if you have to. So these books that we'd automated, we looked at and said, you know, the whole process is automated right now, except for the actual printing. let's go to the fellow that provides our binders and see if they will print off this book. If we create it, can we email him the final result? And he'll do the printing, shrink wrap it with the binder, and send it out to the client. And of course, he was happy to do that. He gave us a great price. And so now the client, instead of getting two packages, one from the printer and one from us, got one package. Yes. Same stuff, all the same stuff that we were providing, but now it's being printed by somebody else. And so that means that that whole step is something we don't have to do anymore. Now, if that printer had gone under, we had a backup printer that we could have used, or we could have brought it back in house because we still had our huge printers that we could have used. We could have brought it back in house if we needed to, but we never have. We chose our partner very carefully. They have been absolutely awesome for us over the years, and we never needed to bring it back in.
How do you identify the red flags in a business? Be it a person error, be it something else, like holistic, how do you identify a red flag?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. Red flags come up in a number of different ways. So you have to keep an eye on your costs. And if your costs start to escalate, then you've got a problem somewhere. And you need to basically say, okay, we've got to take this apart and figure out what's going on. Why are our costs escalating? So for example, we had a period where our refile costs were going up, and they were going up quite a bit. And so we had to take a look at what was going on. Well, what was going on was that the person that we'd hired to do the filings was more interested in how it sounded for her to be typing rather than being accurate in what she was doing. And so as soon as that person was gone, our refile costs went down to almost zero.
Wow. Right.
So you always want to make sure that you look at your numbers. You know, now some people will say, well, you know, I just want to do this. I don't want to look at numbers. If you don't want to look at numbers, then you need to go work for somebody else. If you're going to own a business, you need to look at your numbers or you're going to go bankrupt. More small businesses go out of business because of cash flow than anything else. Drill that into your mind, print it across your forehead. It's really important. You have to look at your numbers. Okay, so watch your numbers. Also, if you have employees and you're talking to them, make sure that you keep an eye out for things that are repetitive. The same problem happens over and over again. Your clients are complaining about the same thing. So maybe, for example, and you've probably found this out yourself, you may be working with a company where, for whatever reason, their customer service is just horrendous. Maybe they're not even aware of it, but their customer service is really bad. That's a huge red flag, because you're going to get rid of clients faster than you can bring them in if that's the case. It takes you a lot less money to keep a client than it does to get a new one. So you always want to keep your clients and then upgrade them to your next level of service or whatever it is, right? So if clients are fleeing, then you need to look at your customer service area. You need to look at that customer experience and see what's going on there. And it can be, you may say, well, you know, I'm not a huge company. Why would I care? You care because, as I said, you want to hang on to your customers. Your customers, your clients are the people who are paying the bills. And so even if you are on your own, if you find that your clients are leaving, take a look at the experience that they're having, right? So you may be a consultant, for example, and you really have a reluctance to talk to your clients when something goes wrong until you've got the solution. Lots of people who are perfectionists are like that. And I started out that way in corporate America, right? I never wanted to talk to a client until I had the solution. I wanted to ride in on my white horse and say, I've got it solved. You know, everything is wonderful. What I learned was that wasn't nearly as important as you're getting back to the client right away and saying, I got your problem. I understand what it is. I'm working on it. I'll get back to you as quickly as I can. If I haven't got a solution by the end of the day, I'll let you know that, and we'll keep working on it until we've solved this. Right? So even if it's just you, right? Look at the experience that your customer is having and think about it for yourself. If I was on the other end of that phone or the Zoom call or face-to-face, right? How would I feel about what it is that I'm doing, how I'm working with that client, right? And make sure that you don't have any red flags in that area. So you're looking at feedback from your clients. You're looking at feedback from your employees if you have them, or independent contractors if you have them. You're looking at your numbers, and those are going to give you your red flags.
Let's just say I'm in a hotel business or something, as you are mentioning about the customer service. Somebody is doing the mistake, or like some area is having the mistake there. And yes, you are seeing your numbers are going down. But how do you really identify that specific spot is what is bleeding there?
Okay, so if you're looking at your numbers and you're catching it there, then you want to go to the process behind that number. So in one case, we found that our supply number was skyrocketing, right? And I mean, there's only so many business supplies you can buy in a month, right? But that number was huge. And so we looked at it and we thought, okay, so what's the process behind that number, right? Who is putting those supply requests in? Who's the buyer? Well, it happened to be our bookkeeper. Lovely woman, loved her to death, just great person. But she always thought, well, you know, I need a rubber band, but look, there's 1,000 rubber bands on special. I'll buy 1,000 rubber bands. Oh, wait, I mean, who needs 1,000 rubber bands, right?
Got it.
So we went back and we sat down with her and said, look, this isn't working for us. So we're going to take that back until we find out what we really need, and then give it back to you. I said, okay, if we do that. And she understood. I mean, she was a bookkeeper. She knew the costs coming in. And we explained to her, see what's happening. These costs are rising, and we need to get a handle on this. So we gave the area back to my husband. And my husband would look at, what do we really need? Not what's on special. What do we really need? And then those costs came down again. So just take a look at, if you're finding this because of a number, look at the process behind the number. If it's because of a person, then look at a couple of things. Look at the skills of the person. Have you done a good enough job training that person? Maybe not. I mean, so many entrepreneurs, when we hire people, we think that we've hired a mind reader, right? And we expect them to just go do it.
Yes.
Well, nobody just goes and does it, right? They need direction from you. You need to have your process documented, even if it's with that person. So you may have them sit beside you while you do something and they take notes, and then you turn it into a process. Whatever it is, if you don't have your processes already documented, then make that your first step. Have them sit beside you, watch what you're doing, ask questions, have them write out the process. And then look at it, make sure there's nothing missing, and say, okay, that's how you're going to do this. I taught people how to do filings by having them watch me, or go bring up the filing, and then I would stand beside them and explain every single step to them. And then they would do it. And then the next time I would stand by them again, and they would do it, and then they could do it on their own. Mm-hmm. Right? So there are lots of ways that you can do things, but look at the training of the person first. Don't just think, oh, I've got the wrong person. Look at what it is that they're doing, and did you tell them to do it differently, or are they second guessing this and they're afraid to ask you? Always look at how approachable you are. Yeah, you're the CEO of your company, and you may be far more intimidating than you think you are, right?
Yes.
So make sure that you're approachable. Make sure people can ask questions, that they can say, you know, I don't really understand this. Can you help me? And then go in with a smile and say, absolutely, let's take a look at this. And if you do that, then you're going to find that that person is going to learn pretty quickly. Now, one thing you have to make sure is that when you hire somebody, that you're hiring not necessarily for skill so much as for attitude.
Hmm.
Okay. Yep. So you're going to find that somebody who has the right attitude, who really wants to learn, who really wants to do a good job, who, you know, takes notes, is detail oriented or whatever, is far more important to you than the person who's been doing this for 30 years and now this is just another job.
Right. Yep.
Right. So if you've got the right person and something is going wrong, look at how you have trained them, look at the process that they're following and make your adjustments accordingly. Don't assume that, you know, the person's an idiot and I've got to get rid of him, because that's usually not the case. You may be looking at the idiot in the mirror.
Yes. Yes. The last question I have, what is the most important thing that you think a person that is about to start the business should have?
You have to feel that what you want to offer to the world is benefit, and you have to get it out there. Right? It's a calling, it's a drive. And even if you're not quite sure if you're brilliant at this, the fact that you have to get this out means that you're supposed to be doing this. You know that we are 4% matter, 96% energy, right? We know things energetically long before we know it up here. And if that energy, that feeling is driving you, that you know that you really, you've got to get this out there. You can do this better than other people. You know that you can do this. Then, yeah, that's what you need, because you've got to have that feeling to drag you through the worst days. Yeah. And if you don't have it, then you're going to give up. You're going to say, this isn't for me. And you're going to go back to a job and you're going to hate yourself, because you're going to look at yourself as a failure.
Yep. Yep.
Right. So just make sure that when you sit quietly and you're just thinking, you know, I really would like to start a business, that feeling is just dying to come out of you, that whatever it is that you want to do is something that you're feeling driven to do, and then say, yeah, okay, let's get on with this.
What is the one worst thing that should not have?
The worst thing is an expectation that this is going to happen overnight.
Yeah,
right? Because so many people think, I'm brilliant, right? A year from now, I'm going to be in seven figures. And unfortunately, a lot of that is fueled by what you see on social media. Yes. You know, I'm going to give you 100,000 clients in 3 days. That doesn't happen. When that person says to you, hey, I can get you 100 clients a month, what you're not seeing is the 6, 7, 10 years that he spent trying to figure out how to do this.
Yes.
And the fact that even if you follow his system, you don't have all of the contacts, you don't have all of the relationships, you don't have everything built up that he built up over those 10 years that you need in order to get those 100 clients a month.
Yep.
So if you go into this thinking that you've got this nailed, it's going to happen overnight, it's not going to happen overnight. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen overnight. So you've got to make that decision when you're going to build that business that you're in this for the long haul.
Yep.
Right. And if you are, then it may actually happen faster than you think. Once you get your energy and your actions aligned, it may happen faster than you think. It's just not going to happen tomorrow. I think that too many of us, women in particular in corporate America, don't recognize our brilliance and don't recognize what we have to offer the world. And it's a combination of heart, mind, and mechanics. It's that we can bring to the table not just the fact that we are brilliant, we've got brilliant skills to do something, but also that we've got the heart to help people with whatever our skill set is. And that combination is so needed in the world.
Yes.
So if you're in corporate America and you're thinking about starting a business of your own, and that is just dying to come out of you, but you think, you know, who am I to do it? Who are you not to do it? Yes. If I can paraphrase Marianne Williamson, do not be afraid of your brilliance. Do not be afraid of your light. If you have something to bring to the world that it can benefit from, then you do it a massive disservice by playing small.
Yes.
Lean into your brilliance and do it.
Okay, thank you for tuning in, and you can find me on all the socials at Smita Gunturi and the show notes for any resources mentioned. See you next week. Take care.